Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. Washington has a higher gas price now than it did a year ago. And that is what's trending.
What's trending? The economy.
We are in a precarious position. And it's weird because sometimes Jay Inslee and Democrats will use the gas prices to make a point about cap and trade. And then sometimes they'll use the gas prices to make a different point that's in diametric opposition to the point that they just made. It's kind of weird. We've got coming up in November, not just a presidential election, but you're going to be voting on initiatives, one of which would get rid of the cap and trade program, which is responsible for about 50 cents per gallon extra that you pay. We knew it was going to happen. We had the state's economists saying it was going to happen. We had experts in the field saying it was going to happen. And then you had Jay Inslee who said, actually, you might be saving money. And if you're going to pay anything more, it's probably just going to be pennies that lead to like $5 extra a gallon. So people are struggling. People are struggling. Gas is expensive. And it's yet about 20 cents more than it was last year at this exact time. According to AAA, right now the average is $4.67. We're the second highest in the country. We are second only to California at $5.45. They're dealing with a similar issue of just getting hit hard with extra fees and taxes because gas is evil or something. It's odd that when gas prices went down very briefly this year, I think it was January, Jay Inslee comes out and says, see, they just jacked the prices up because they wanted to make a point to try to defeat my legislation. Look at how low it is now. It was still high at the time, but it was technically lower than where it was. I don't hear him saying anything now that it's back up. I guess did they not make the point that you said that they were trying to make? They want to make the point again, but they didn't want to make the point in January, but they do now. Okay. You're laughing. I just want to be sure.
How are we higher than Hawaii? Like
I know. It really is weird. Although I don't even see Hawaii on. Oh, there it is. $4. Oh, no. Hawaii is now up. They were $4.61 yesterday. It's now $4.76. So we're number three.
Oh, we're making progress. Okay.
Wait, hold on. We're number three. No, you're supposed to be cheering. We're not number two or one anymore. It's better news. No? Okay, get it out of your systems. Okay. No. You're stop it. Shut up. Don't hiss at me. Don't hiss. I didn't. No, you hiss. Hiss to you. I didn't do it. It's not me. Blame Jay Inslee. My God. I should hit refresh and make sure we're still number three. Okay, yeah, we're still number three. Well, because then I was like, what's in Alaska? Alaska is also kind of high sometimes. Everything on the West Coast is high with the exception, it's technically high, Montana, but it's beneath the, or it's lower than the national average of $3.64. They're at $3.59. You would kill for that. That's more than a dollar per gallon cheaper than where we are. However, right now, we're about 20 cents higher than where we were last year. Today, we're in Seattle, Bellevue, Everett, so just Western Washington. Right now, we're at $4.83. Last year, $4.64. Like, that's nuts. That's nuts. And when you talk to people, they're obviously well aware of how much extra money they're spending just to fill up a gas tank.
With inflation and everything, it's becoming less and less affordable to live here.
And just going over all of the data, no matter how you slice it or look at it, it's just bad. The Bureau of Labor Statistics put out their data points on gasoline for the entire country. And when you look at Washington, you've got gas prices, again, in this Western Washington, it's sort of, they say Seattle Metro, it's Tacoma, Bellevue, Everett, basically Western Washington. $4.54 was the average in March. They say area gasoline prices were similar to March 2023, with the exception of being, 22% higher. They say the 13.5 cents per kilowatt Seattle area households that paid for electricity, 7.1% higher. So you're also getting screwed there. They say that was prices paid by Seattle area consumers for utility which is piped gasoline, $1.18, which is 20.3% lower than March. That was the one thing that was actually better. So that's a, I mean.
That's something.
I mean, yeah. We're doing away with that, though. Aren't we banning that?
Probably. I mean, yeah. if it's good, we're probably banning it.
It's gasoline.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, we're getting rid of it. We're getting away from that. Okay. How much that will matter here in Washington State as it relates to all the other positions, I don't know. Probably not. But I can't see anyone who drives a car looking at the cap and trade program unless they're uber wealthy. The kinds of people who spend the $15 to drive in express toll lanes, right? Other than them, who would say yes to keeping that?
Or the kind of people that like make a point of telling you that they drive a Tesla.
Oh my God, they don't say Tesla anymore. Now they say what? Nissan Leaf or something.
Right.
Because you know, Elon Musk is a white supremacist. Didn't you hear that? You didn't hear that? Didn't you hear that?
I've heard from some people. Yeah, it doesn't seem to add up.
It says it on the web. Don't pull this because he's African nonsense. Even Africans can be white supremacists if they're South African and white. Okay, push the button.
What's trending? Anti-Semitism.
Well, there was another Jew-hating rally today in Seattle, this time coming from the dweebs who work at Google. They're upset that Google spends money. They have a $1.2 billion contract with Israel, and you're not allowed to do that because they're Jews. Didn't you know that? Now, of course, they don't tell it that way, although they do chant things like, we don't want two-state, we want 1948. You don't want Israel to exist.
From the river to the sea.
I'm just saying, I mean, if you don't want Israel to exist, I'm going to say you just don't like Jews. Sorry. And it, you know, for some people, including some people on the right, it's hard to wrap their heads around this as a concept. But think of it this way. If you want to get rid of the United States, you want to get rid of Americans. It's exactly the same thing. But you're saying, well, Judaism is a religion, but it's also an identity. It is also a nationality. It is also an ethnicity. It is a bunch of different identities. You are born Jewish. You can become Jewish by conversion, but you are born Jewish if your mother is, it's passed along by blood. You get that, right? You know that whole thing about having an ancestral homeland? That's tied to all of this. And so when we say you have a problem with Jews, that's why we say it that way. If you don't want us to exist. And by the way, the same way, frankly, even though it's not analogous, but if you wanted to erase from a map a Muslim majority country, they would call you an Islamophobe. They would do that in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. And yet when it comes to Jews, we just disagree with policy. What policy do you disagree with? The right to defend oneself. I don't like that policy. Okay, thanks. We know where you stand. So they showed up, and by showed up, they just left the offices and went like 10 feet away. They yelled,
"We will free Palestine!
We will free Palestine!"
Really? What are y'all doing? Kind of sounds like you're in Salt Lake Union enjoying a nice afternoon. This was before it started to rain briefly. That's all you guys were doing. And our friend Sam Campbell from our sister station, Cairo News Radio, I mean, he did yeoman's work today. They can't send me down there to talk to these people because they'll sense Jew a mile away. They'll just say, hey, what's going on? I sense something in our force has been just like, what is that? And they probably say, it smells like sulfur or something. These people are hateful bigots. I've got a Star of David around my neck. They'll probably at some point spot that if I don't wear a tie. So they sent Sam, who's not Jewish, and he talked to a bunch of people who are heroes. Did you know that they're heroes?
Really?
Yeah, they're here. Listen to this hero.
Really what this is about protecting thousands of civilians that are still at risk of losing their lives.
That's a hero. Them leaving their office and taking the afternoon off to chant in beautiful weather, that was the sacrifice that had to be made in order to save thousands of people.
With their Starbucks, probably, and,
Well, sometimes you get thirsty. It's a nice day. You want a cold brew. What do you want? I'm not going to give them a hard time for that. Here's another hero. Oh, no, it's the same one.
It's very clear that this war on Gaza has been using some very advanced AI tech.
So is that true? Because y'all said that it's so indiscriminate that just everyone is dying. And Israel's all like, no, we're being hyper specific. We're targeting people. We're targeting the bad guys. Doesn't mean that civilians won't ever die, but we're targeting the bad guys. We're doing what we can. But then you also say that they're not doing everything that they can, that they're just indiscriminately bombing. So which is it? Sometimes they have the AI technology. Maybe the indiscriminate bombing is when they have to do a reboot and wait 30 seconds and do a power cycle of the computer before they're able to fire up the software again. Perhaps that's what it is. Now, they're taking specific issue with something called Project Nimbus, which is a cloud computing project for the Israeli government. Over at MyNorthwest.com, they're reporting that it's used not just by the government, but specifically by the military. And this apparently is just the cloud solution, meaning you're just saving stuff in the cloud that the military uses. That's basically what it is that they're taking issue with. And so they're saying they should not be allowed to do this. They also say technology is unjustly being used against Palestinians, blah, 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 blah. The No Tech for Apartheid group, yeah, that's the name of it, No Tech for Apartheid, oh my God, said Google and Amazon have signed a $1.2 billion contract called Project Nimbus with the apartheid Israeli government. Don't ask me to defend or define or explain or even spell apartheid. Target them with artificial intelligence and force them off their land. Do they have it in reverse? I think they have it in reverse.
Yeah, they're a little
Hamas,
confused.
Yeah, okay, Hamas is doing that to the Jews, right? Okay, and Hamas doesn't allow Jews into Gaza to work, right?
No.
Okay, I just wanted to double check. I mean, and the gays get thrown off the buildings in Gaza, correct?
Correct.
For, I mean, they must have done something awful, right?
Well, they're gay, right? Isn't that the...
Oh, yeah, they just hate gay people,
yeah.
Which is weird for progressives to fight for the Palestinian people. Who hold those views in Gaza.
You know, they say politics makes for strange bedfellows.
It really does. And not same-sex bedfellows, though.
That's true.
Let's be clear. We don't want to get thrown from any building in Gaza. They say for almost 3 years, thousands of tech workers have already pushed back on Project Nimbus and have been met with total silence from management and executives. It's kind of weird, but you still work there, huh? You're still collecting that nice little six-figure paycheck, huh? It's odd, and you don't want to get fired, which is why you're covering your face while you're out there, huh? Kind of odd, because, you know, you were outdoors. You were also social distancing. You didn't really have to have all those masks on. Why did you? And given all the silence due to your deep concern for the Palestinian people, why did you continue to work there? There are other tech jobs. Can you just double check on Wikipedia? Are there other tech jobs? Oh, Wikipedia is hiring too? Okay, yeah, so you can work lots of different places. And it's my understanding that this general area has a whole bunch of tech workers. And they don't all work for Amazon. Huh. I mean, Microsoft has a cloud department. Why don't you work there? Or do they also do something with Jews?
They'd find something, I'm sure.
I'm sure too. I like that they have more than this group. Okay, I can't get over it. No Tech for Apartheid. Well, how can you commit the apartheid without technology? Oh, I see what they're saying. How does the technology play a role in apartheid exactly?
Do they also realize like how much of the world's technology like comes from Israel? Like,
no, they do. Well, some do. Here's the funny thing. I've got a piece out tomorrow at foxnews.com about who the protesters really are. And I think we talked a little bit about this yesterday, and that's what inspired me to write slash just copy and paste my transcript and then make it a little bit better so that it would get published. When you get to the bottom of most of their websites, they always start attacking capitalism, right? When you have all of these groups stop people from getting to, you know, ports or airports or just to work, that impacts the economy. When the name of your group is called the Economic Blockade, you're saying that you're trying to harm the economy. Now, folks on the radical left, and the Venn diagram of Jew haters and anti-capitalists is almost completely overlapping, right? You see, they believe capitalism to be oppressive. Israel is a entrepreneurial dream, the environment that they've created. They have a robust economy. It is very, very, very tech heavy, very tech heavy. To your point, Jackson, they are responsible for a ton of technological advancement, including, by the way, AI. And if you hate capitalism and you look into that region, what's the one capitalist society? What's the one Western society? from a culture perspective, it's Israel. And so from that lens, I understand why they loathe Israel. And they see it as oppressive. So that's that viewpoint is what they look through or use to look through the lens of how, quote unquote, Palestinians are being treated. That's all that they can see. Evil capitalist. And they're all white. Jews apparently are white to the radical left, just like Asians, because our data points don't fall in line with, quote unquote, people of color. And they immediately see brown person on the other side who's not capitalist, meaning they're oppressed automatically. That's all that this is. Seriously, that is what this is all about. And we saw this unfold with the Black Lives Matter movement. It started out actually peaceful. They were angry, but it was peaceful from a, you know, certainly in the context of what it became. Why did it become violent? Because you had a bunch of anti-capitalists in Antifa and other groups commandeering the entire movement and making it about their issues. Sure, they were pretending to want to defund police. They want to, but that wasn't really their end goal. They want to dismantle capitalism. So when they say we have to dismantle systems of oppression, they're talking about every American institution, but it comes down to specifically capitalism. Why are they so angry? It's a mix of probably some guilt. These are people who come from very privileged backgrounds, almost always. When you look at the Antifa radicals or any of these people who end up getting caught going after Jews, they come from wealthy families in Kirkland, okay? That's what we're talking about here. They've got a nice piece of property that they live on with their parents in Edmonds. And you've got these kids who are working as part-time baristas, upset about not being able to just, you know, move through life without making it obvious that you're just stealing from your parents. That's really what this is about. They're lonely on weekends. They have nothing to do. And they find someone with, you know, like-minded hate in their hearts. And they end up creating this movement. They've created the boogeyman out of, you know, Joe Capitalist, which is a white guy who's wealthy and he's got a monocle. Did you know that?
He's got a cane and a top hat.
Okay. They're not going to go over the top. The top hat, that part's true. They also have a pocket watch. That's what they have. Not the cane.
Looks like Mr. Peanut.
Uh-huh. It's exactly. I was, you know what? It was funny. I was like, this guy's head is weird. And now I see it. It's a peanut. So that's really what this is all about. It's true. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Safety first.
So I fear that if I look at this story, I'm never going to want to fly again, although I would never fly American Airlines because they are so bad. They are so bad. But the title of this Fox Business story is American Airlines pilots, they see significant spike in safety-related issues. Oh, my God. They say in both safety and maintenance-related via its operations, they see these issues. They say among the problematic trends, the union has been tracking the tools left in wheel wells, an increasing number of collisions between aircrafts being tugged or towed, and an increasing number of items left in the safe area near jet bridges. Now, this is in a statement from the Allied Pilots Association. I'm sure it ends with give us more money and we'll make sure this doesn't actually cause any problems. They say in one instance, the APA Safety Committee received a phone call regarding a flight that departed Phoenix on March 25th concerning a tool in the wheel well. During the pre-flight exterior inspection, a pilot discovered a hammer in the left wheel well. Maintenance personnel further inspected the aircraft and also discovered pliers and a screwdriver in the left wheel well. They say just because it's legal doesn't make it safe. Well, the inverse is also not necessarily true, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I don't want anything just loose in a wheel well, but if it's not against the rules, it sounds like a weird rule, honestly, but okay. At least they're aware of it, right?
Yeah.
Well, and you know, it's like a pen. You always lose your pen. They probably always lose their hammer or screwdriver just when you need it to, you know, screw something in, a bolt of some kind, and you just don't have the tool. Maybe that's what it was. They didn't have the tools. They lost it, and that's why they didn't screw the bolts on.
Maybe they had to go to Home Depot?
Yeah. No, well, you don't want to go to Home Depot in the middle of the day. Your supervisor's going to think you're lying, just taking some time off. Last month, United CEO Scott Kirby made a public announcement reassuring flyers that the carrier is looking into the string of incidents that have recently involved its planes. from engine and structural issues to a wheel falling off during takeoff. Oh, who hasn't had a wheel fall off during takeoff? Relax. At least 8 unrelated incidents have occurred on planes operated by United since the end of February, so it's not just American Airlines. As a result, the FAA has increased oversight of the carrier to ensure, in part, that it is complying with safety regulations. So the good news is the people who were supposed to ensure safety regulations and failed miserably are going to be even more in charge of overseeing safety regulations, but hopefully this time not failing.
I'm sure they learned their lesson.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, because this is the first time we've ever had an issue with safety in flight in FAA's history. Oh, my God. The captain of the union said, he's a captain, he's the president of the union, Captain Ed Seiher. They met with senior management earlier this month to discuss the, quote, operational hazards we have identified. And they say that they now have management's full attention. Nothing's going to get done, but they have the full attention. So that sounds pretty good. Okay. I'm going to take America Airlines off my list. I'm going to stick with Delta. Haven't seen a lot of Delta stories in the news, with the exception of that weird guy who tweeted about racism. But that wasn't Delta's fault. It wasn't a flight attendant who assumed he played basketball. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. 1-800-465-8770. You are listening to The Jason Rant Show.
The Jason Rant Show.
Here to react, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rant.
And the rise of soft on crime laws and policies have made it worse.
Our man in the Pacific Northwest, Jason Rant, is on that.
And you keep on bringing these extraordinary stories from Seattle. It's amazing.
Long form.
The Washington State GOP convention is happening on Thursday, and there's a lot on the line this time because they will allow a vote to decide who the Republican Party will support going into this primary. It's a way to avoid having a lot of money being spent on campaigns that they believe don't have a shot, but it's come with some controversy. Joining me on the line ahead of all of this, she's running for the 3rd congressional seat against the incumbent, but also against another Republican challenger in Joe Kent, is Leslie Llewellyn. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
So it's not just about going against the incumbent, it's who they believe is vulnerable here because of the makeup of the district, but it's really about going up against Joe Kent. We're going to have one Republican challenger. What are your thoughts headed into this convention on Thursday?
Well, unity isn't conformity, and frankly, Joe Kent secured an early endorsement last August, in August of 2023, a full calendar year before the actual primary. And I don't believe that limiting choices on the ballot before voters even have a chance to vote is what the way our country was founded is completely undemocratic.
So what's the plan?
So what do you mean? What is the plan?
How are you going to handle it? I mean, they've already made a decision, right? In the case that you're bringing up, you've got Thursday. I'm presuming nothing will dramatically change. So how do you overcome that?
So I won't be participating in the Washington State Convention. They suspended the very rules that they want everybody to operate under right now back in August. They suspended the rules. They tried to get an early endorsement passed for Joe. It failed. Then they went and they tried to change the voting majority from 2/3 to a simple majority. That failed. It took 3 times. And finally, the 3rd time, after strong arming people, there was 40 people that decided that they would ignore the will of over 100,000 voters in the 3rd congressional district, who said that they did not want Joe Kent to represent them. So I won't be participating. The only endorsement that I'm seeking is that of the Washington State voters. And then they will determine in August who that candidate should be to move forward in the general against Marie Glusenkamp Perez.
Is there
you're absolutely right.
Go ahead. No, please go ahead.
I was going to say, you're absolutely right. I mean, Marie Glusenkamp Perez is the most vulnerable member of Congress. The Democrat super PAC has already allocated $10 million to focus on this race and then Lori Chavez Dreamer's seat in Oregon 5. So they know what's at stake here. If we lose this seat again, we could lose the majority in the House of Representatives. And I don't want to double down on another loss. Mm-hmm. Joe Kent lost in the last election cycle, and he's going to lose again by an even wider margin. There hasn't been one federal or statewide rematch in Washington state that's resulted in a flipped outcome in 30 years. So I do not understand why we are endorsing somebody who is already a proven loser.
I guess my concern for you would be, let's say you make it out of the primary and you get to the general. Do you have a fear that activists will on the right just won't support you or won't go out in the way that you would hope because you skip on Thursday or really Thursday through the weekend and because you've been calling this whole system out?
No, I don't think so. So I know what it's like to win an election and to represent the voters, and it's not by circumventing their voice. Unity is achieved when people feel heard and they feel that their voices have been heard. And that's exactly what I've been doing. I've been building a strong coalition of supporters throughout the district, and that's ultimately what will unite the party, is when people feel that they've been heard and when you bring everybody to the table. We lost voters. We lost people who were supporting Jamie Herrera Butler. We lost Heidi St. John voters. And we lost people that decided for the first time in their life they were going to vote for a Democrat because they felt Joe Kent was too extreme. That's what's at risk here. And I know that I can bring all of the voters that we lost in the last election cycle back to the table because this district is ultimately a red district. Trump won the district by 4 points in 2020, and Tiffany won the district by 7 points in 2022. Marie Guzman-Camp-Perez should never have won this seat, and we have to flip the seat back now or we risk losing it forever, and we risk, frankly, losing the majority in the House of Representatives.
Why do you think the process unfolded the way that it did?
In 2022?
With the endorsement.
Oh, I think that you had a number of people that felt that they could somehow put their finger on the balance and that they knew that math was going to be a problem for Joe Kent. And so they thought that this way, by endorsing him a year before the actual primary, that this would somehow give him a leg up. But it's not working out that way. He's not getting the support of the voters. He was unable to get their support in 2022, and he's losing momentum and he's losing steam. His best shot was in 2022. He's not gaining any ground at all. In fact, I'm gaining a lot of ground. There's a ton of interest around this campaign. There's a lot of support and a lot of people who are just thrilled to have an alternative to Joe Kent, who is too extreme and lost.
You call him too extreme. What are some issues that you and he are just not on board with? What are the issues that show his being too extreme, but you being more, I don't know, centrist conservative? How would you describe yourself?
Sure. Well, so he just doesn't represent the district at all. He talks about being America first, but what he really means is he wants to be America alone. He would abandon our allies and leave us alone without our friends. And he advocates for such isolationist policies that would leave this congressional district without trading partners and without friends. And that's a huge part of this district. If you've got someone who's willing to cut off our shipping partners, that's a lot of jobs that will be lost in this district. It was hard to get behind Joe because his policy positions are also inconsistent. Sometimes he's advocating for extreme immigration, that he'll stop all legal immigration for 20 years, while at the same time he was advocating for liberal policies like Medicare for all. He's extreme on both sides, and he proves that his political ideology is a horseshoe. Everybody else is in the middle, and he's on both ends. And I think that's something that just does not fit with the majority of the voters here in the 3rd Congressional District. And then he does tend to jump towards policy positions that are unsubstantiated. For example, when he implied that the CIA could be behind the Russia terrorist attack, that's out of step with Washington 3 voters, and it's dangerous to have policy positions that don't have any factual backup or basis.
Leslie Llewellyn joining me on the line. She's running for Congress in Washington's 3rd Congressional District. Her website, by the way, is leslie4washington.com. It's all spelled out, F-O-R, leslie4washington.com. Let's talk about perhaps where you might disagree with Joe Kent on Israel. Iran, obviously, over the weekend decided to stage its attacks. It clearly did not go perhaps the way that they had hoped. But at the end of the day, it was obviously provocative. It was the first time in history in which Iran attacked Israel from Iranian soil. What should U.S. policy be in support of Israel?
Israel is one of our longest standing allies in the Middle East, and we need to stand with Israel, and we need to support them. I've always said I'm a Reagan Republican. I believe in peace through strength, and I believe that we should support our allies and support our friends. We can definitely be America first, but we should never, ever be America alone.
So what does that mean as far as policy? Would you support any kind of military operation in retaliation from Israel to Iran?
I think that as an ally of Israel, we should support Israel with whatever means that they think is necessary to defend themselves and protect themselves. You know, on October 6th, we had a ceasefire agreement, and that was breached on October 7th. And all of this conflict is a direct result of the failed Biden administration. We are weak. We are weak nationally. We are weak globally. And I don't think that Hamas would have ever attacked Israel. And I don't believe that Iran would be attacking Israel if we had a much stronger Republican president in office. And I look forward to that day soon.
Do you support Israeli aid, a package being voted on this week, separate from Ukraine, or does it not matter?
I personally would like to see all of the packages be separate and distinct. I think that when you start lumping everything together, you can have problems. I think that supporting our allies does not mean coming with, it doesn't necessarily mean it should come with a blank check. We need to be transparent and accountable for where all of our funds are going and how they're being utilized.
Would you vote for the Ukrainian package?
I would. But like I said, I think
you just want to see them separate for the sake of, you know, keeping all the politics out of it, essentially.
I do. I think that's the best way to move forward. And I think it prohibits things getting blurred or other policy positions being dumped into the package that don't have any relevance or bearing on the issues.
You end up just sneaking stuff in. On top of that, you then use one issue as leverage for the other. Because I think it's fair to say that Republicans are not all on the same page as far as Ukrainian aid, but they do appear to be all on the same page as far as Israeli aid, right? Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, Democrats want those two together because they want to exploit Republicans, which only hurts Israel.
Exactly.
So bottom line, we're headed into the convention in the weeks ahead. What's the game plan to get in front of people, whether it's, in Camas, your hometown, or outside of Camas in the district? What is that singular message that you're going to send about why they should go with you instead of Joe Kent?
I am a proven winner. I represent the district. This is a safe Republican district. I know what it's like to win. I know what it's like to represent the people. I'm a fifth generation Washingtonian. I'm a former prosecutor. Law and order is on my side. I have been delivering results for the past 3.5 years while Joe Kent has just been talking about it. In fact, the only thing that he's actually delivered to Southwest Washington is he delivered a very safe Republican seat to a progressive Democrat. And I'm here to flip the seat back, keep the majority in the House of Representatives, because Americans are sick and tired of watching our country just continue to go down the toilet. I think over 80% of Americans think that this country is on the wrong track. And I know that we deserve better, and I intend to deliver.
There you go. Again, Leslie Llewellyn, she's running for congressional seat number 3 here in Washington State. Her website is leslie4washington.com. It's all spelled out, leslie4washington.com. Thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thank Thank you. Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Again, the website, leslie4washington.com. We're back with more after this.
The Jason Rance Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle top radio host Jason Rance. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rance is in focus now.
Jason Rance, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
Well, some Republicans, two in particular, got together and said, hey, you know what we should do ahead of the election? We should really make it impossible for us to win back the House. Let's act like petulant little children and show the world that we as a party are incapable of getting anything done. They got together and said that, apparently. And today, of course, they allowed the media to pick up on that ludicrous position that, frankly, I can't blame the media on this. Marjorie Taylor Greene last week said that Speaker Mike Johnson needs to be out of that office. She filed this motion to vacate, and now she's got the backing of Congressman Thomas Massie, the Republican from Kentucky, who some people will say he is so principled, and we love that about him. Cool. Well, his principled position on not wanting to negotiate or compromise at all with Democrats at a time where there is virtually no margin for error will likely cost the Republicans the House if he keeps up with this. But let's listen to him today talking with reporters.
There's only one person right now who can stop us from going into what happened last fall, and that's Mike Johnson. He's cleaning the barn, that's obvious. He had three things to do. He wanted to do an omnibus that broke all the spending records. He wanted to do FISA without warrants. Now he wants to do Ukraine. Those are the three.
And he said Ukraine. The funding is on Ukraine.
Three things. There are people riding him like a horse here. They don't care when the horse collapses. I do, because it's going to throw our confidence into turmoil. If he would do what John Boehner did, when John Boehner had at least announced that he was cleaning the barn and said, I'm leaving, whatever it was, 8 weeks hence, or when you find somebody to replace me. If Speaker Johnson would do that, we could go without ever being speakerless, and we could be in control of it in conference.
Now, one of the big issues, aside from bringing up the three for a potential vote, these three separate bills, and we're talking Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, but he did not include border security provisions as part of the Ukraine plan. Now, I think that's a mistake. I do. However, a bigger mistake is playing into chaos that will occur if they actually try to vacate him from office that will hurt Republicans just a few weeks from now. And I have to assume that Mike Johnson is working behind the scenes negotiating something that is helpful for Republicans, and or he's looking at some polling that indicates the job is going to hang in the balance, or Republican power hangs in the balance, and Ukraine is not a winning issue for them to fight on. Now, you can disagree with his tactics 100%. I disagree with them. However, when you go ahead and pull stunts like this, when you don't have everyone on the same page, and they do not have everyone on the same page, it makes you look weak and chaotic. If they go ahead and create that sort of chaos and get just a couple more votes and essentially pull another Kevin McCarthy, Matt Gaetz situation, you look like total idiots. You look so incredibly incompetent. And people are not going to reward you for that. It's going to hurt. And one thing that we need is control of the House. We need control of the House. We need control of the Senate. We need control of the White House. Now, I believe we're going to get the Senate just based on the map looks very favorable for Republicans. House, it's anyone's guess. It's going to come down to individual races, and you're now going to force those members of Congress who are either running for re-election or running for the first time to take a stance on these issues that might hurt them amongst Republicans and make it so that they don't win their election or re-election, then losing out the slim margin that we have in the majority, how does that serve anyone? How does that long term serve the Republican caucus? It doesn't. It absolutely doesn't. And God bless you, Marjorie Taylor Greene. You don't run the party, and I don't want someone like you running the party. She's a little cray-cray.
Speaker next Congress, if we're lucky enough to have the majority. And I think that is widely held belief throughout the conference.
Is he going to be speaker for the rest of this Congress, do you think?
That is to be determined.
See, that is a stupid response. And of course, the media loves to play clips from her because she's so out there. And she is. You can like some of the positions she takes. I like some of the positions she takes. I don't want her being a spokesperson for Republicans. She's insane. She comes off as an insane person. Sorry, that's the truth. It is absolutely the truth. Now, to say that Mike Johnson won't be the speaker next session, okay, I don't care about that. But to put any uncertainty about his future right now, not a good look. Not a good look for Republicans. And from his part, Speaker Johnson said, yeah, I'm not going anywhere.
I am not resigning. And see? It is, in my view, an absurd notion that someone would bring a vacate motion when we are simply here trying to do our jobs. It is not helpful to the cause. It is not helpful to the country. It does not help the House Republicans advance our agenda, which is in the best interest of the American people here, a secure border, sound governance. And it's not helpful to the unity that we have in the body.
He's 100% correct. Again, you can disagree with directions all you want. You can disagree with legislation. Sure, I think that is totally open. But when you do so in ways that threaten any kind of power structure moving forward, meaning you won't have the majority, that is foolish. That is foolish. You can go ahead and punish Mike Johnson after this, after the election. Punish him all you want, because there's at least going to be 2 years separation from the next vote in the House. But doing it this close, it does not make any sense, period. End of story. End of story. And for Thomas Massie to jump on board doing it in this way, just shameful. And let me just read you some of the headlines that are shaping the narrative here. Civil war hits GOP over foreign aid. Like, that's not a good one, right? That hurts. That absolutely hurts. Second GOP lawmaker backs ousting House Speaker, putting Johnson's job in peril. Second lawmaker joins push to oust Speaker Mike Johnson. All of this indicates turmoil, chaos. And by the way, I don't even think two people are chaos. It's about the perception, especially given that those two people, if that turns into four people, it does create chaos. And then again, you've got an entire conference being held hostage. And that Matt Gaetz, at least at this point, hasn't come forward to lean in. The last time this came up, right when Marjorie Taylor Greene put in that, or made the motion to vacate, he had come out, like, I think the next day, it might have even been that evening, saying, yeah, I'm not at that point yet. I'm not backing this idea. If he's saying no to it, he must be looking at some data as well that says this is the kind of move that does not help politically. All the focus should be right now is maintaining and then growing that majority. And if it means you don't take certain votes, then it means you don't take certain votes, because you want to win the long-term game, not the short-term. Short-term doesn't mean anything when it can be very, very, very easily overturned. So let's live in a world in which the Ukraine funding doesn't go forward because you didn't get the immigration bill. Or live in a world in which you get Ukraine and immigration, like border security, in the same bill, regardless of the path you go down. Let's just say you get that. Well, in a few months from now, if House leaders deem it so on the left and they're in power, they can just undo all the legislation depending on what the numbers look like. Is that so? Tell me if that's worth it. I don't think it is. 1-800-465-8770 for your texts. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.